I'm Afshin Ratansi. Welcome back to Going Underground, broadcasting all around the world from the UAE. And yes, I'm recovering from a sinus operation, so bear with me. Today, as the UN Security Council debates maritime security, US President Donald Trump is melting down, facing disgust over the Epstein case, with nearly half of Americans believing he was involved in Epstein's crimes, according to the Economist YouGov polling. Trump is lashing out, threatening countries buying Russian commodities with tariffs, even though Trump continues to buy uranium from Russia. That's Russia, whose leader Vladimir Putin is expected to meet with Trump in the next few days. It follows Trump in the past few weeks, sending thermonuclear gravity bombs, each one as powerful as the entire Gaza genocide so far, to a military base near Cambridge in subservient England. Moscow has now abandoned its suspension of positioning ground-based short and long-range nuclear weapons against NATO capitals. And the impact of Trump threats on the international community? The Indian Prime Minister Narendra Modi will meet with Xi Jinping in China at the end of this month. Joining me again from New York is Professor Jeffrey Sachs, Director of Columbia University's Center for Sustainable Development, President of the UN Sustainable Development Solutions Network at the UN, the former advisor to UN Secretaries General Kofi Annan, Ban Ki-moon, and Antonio Guterres. Professor Sachs, thanks so much for coming on. You know, I prepared for this interview, and it was all about doom. You know, the Ohio-class submarines with nuclear missiles are much more powerful than Nagasaki or Hiroshima being redeployed. And as I said, gravity bombs for England. And then suddenly out of a hat, we hear that the perhaps most existential question of our time will be debated between Donald Trump and Vladimir Putin this week. What do you make of it?
I hope it's good news that they're meeting. As usual, we have no public information or public explanation of anything from the White House. We live in not in a democracy, but in an imperium right now, one person rule. And either we hear from Truth Social something, or we're a little bit befuddled. So when you ask, what does this upcoming meeting mean? Does it mean that the United States is going to get serious about diplomacy? I don't know. Russia has put on the table for years, actually, its terms for coming to an end of this war. Basically, Russia has said that it has national security concerns. The expansion of NATO was the cause of the war in Ukraine. The U.S.-led coup in February 2014 was the provocation that led onward to war in Ukraine. If Trump comes to this meeting with the honesty and says, yes, the United States should stop provoking Russia, stop trying to weaken Russia, stop trying to divide Russia, then there could be peace. If the president comes, as he is wont to do, with the demands, you must stop this and that, there will not be peace. There will be ongoing war, and probably the meeting will be not at all what we would hope. So I don't think we know right now until this meeting happens. The problem is we have a intemperate president, absolutely without any kind of stability, who does not speak to the public and who does not engage in any kind of political deliberation. He just makes orders. So this is a big problem.
Well, in fairness, he speaks more than any other president to the public. It's just difficult to decipher him.
Well, yes, he issues demands, executive decrees, or pronouncements from on high in Truth Social. He does not actually explain anything. Not only does he not explain anything, there's no public debate or deliberation in the United States. It's the whole world sitting on the edge of the seat wondering what King Donald will do next. This is not conducive to global stability. It is not solving problems up to this moment, not at all. As you said, there's an ongoing genocide in Gaza. There is rising tension in East Asia. There is an ongoing war in Ukraine. The president proclaims himself the the king of peace or the president of peace, but the fact is he's complicit in genocide that is ongoing every hour of every day right now. And we don't have any adult discussion of these issues by the White House or any other institutions of the U.S. government. So this meeting, in a way, came out of the blue. But what it actually signifies is impossible to say at this moment.
Yeah, I'll get to the genocide in a moment. The weird thing was when it was announced that there was going to be a meeting, I think the president of the UAE was in Moscow at the same time. The White House had just published a addressing threats to the United States by the government of the Russian Federation. The actions and policies of the government of Russia continue to pose an unusual and extraordinary threat to the national security and foreign policy of the United States. How on earth is whatever is happening in Western Europe, the tragedy of Ukraine, how is that affecting the security of the United States? What do you think is meant by that? Or is that just a different department ahead of the talks?
Well, look, the fact of the matter is that American missiles, guided and tracked by American military personnel, are hitting Russia. The U.S. Military is attacking Russia. And then the White House says that the U.S. security is at risk. It's mind-boggling. It should make George Orwell blush, frankly, because Orwell, even in his most wondrous imagination, couldn't come up with the Orwellian illogic of this White House. You want national security for the United States? Stop having American missiles striking into Russia. Stop the CIA and the MI6 from supporting Ukraine to actually destroy part of Russia's strategic triad, the attack on Russia's strategic bombers. Is that going to give America security? Of course not. It brings us closer to nuclear war. All of the nuclear saber rattling of the last couple of weeks, and you mentioned several specifics, do not bring American security. They bring American insecurity. So this is really the question. And statements such as the one you just read are the opposite of the truth. America is insecure only because it keeps provoking. America, which views itself in this political circle in Washington as ruling the world, has to learn that we're in a multipolar world and you don't attack the other nuclear superpower. Thank you. You find a way for mutual accommodation. Now, maybe this meeting can do that, but so far, it hasn't happened. So far, Trump has given demands to Russia, ultimatums. You have 10 days to do this, given ultimatums to India or to Brazil or to China. Not negotiations, not diplomacy, not an exchange of views, but ultimatums. And if it continues that way, we just edge closer and closer to nuclear war.
I mean, if we ignore the genocide in Gaza, you can see, though, that unlike the Democrats who would have continued the proxy war on Russia, that for the Global South, everything Trump is doing is creating a kind of unity that we've never seen before. The tariffs on India, threatening India, the threatening of Brazil, strengthening BRICS every move he makes. So Trump has been good in some ways. Or do you think we should take it seriously when he has, who is this, General Donahue, who's being quoted around on camera? This is the commanding U.S. general of U.S. forces in Europe and Africa saying that Kaliningrad, the isolated place between Lithuania and Poland, the Russian territory, could be taken and they're practicing.
Look, every statement like that is a disaster because we live in a world of stupid leaders, people who do not have basic self-control. We have a lot of military that are exactly like that. That's been demonstrated throughout U.S. modern history. You go to any crisis, like the Cuban Missile Crisis, the advisors of John F. Kennedy said, shoot first, discuss later. If the world had been left to them, there would be no world today. So I think our big problem is we're not in safe hands. We're not in good prudential hands. Not only are leaders like Trump intemperate, but they're surrounded by other intemperate people, and accidents happen. Signals get misread. Flocks of geese are interpreted as incoming missiles. We know this from history. This is not just surmise. This is actual experience. So when a general, I didn't see that quotation, but if a general talks openly about seizing Russian territory, well, this is mind-boggling because Russia has 6,000 nuclear warheads, 1,600 that are deployed. Russia is under attack by the U.S. and U.K. I say that because while Ukraine nominally presses the button or makes the attack, it's U.S. weaponry, U.S. satellites, U.S. intelligence, U.S. tracking, U.S. logistics. And so we have an active hot war going on right now. It's insane. Now, maybe maybe Trump, I don't know, maybe he could come to some reality. I'm hoping so. So I don't want to dismiss the meeting, obviously, as meaningless. I never would have guessed that such a meeting would come at this moment. Maybe envoy Witkoff told Putin, yeah, we understand NATO shouldn't expand. Yeah, we understand this is provocation. Yeah, we have to wind this down because before it gets completely out of control. Maybe that's what they heard, and that's why the meeting is going to happen. I hope so. So far, no American president has had either the bravery or the decency to tell the truth, which is that from the time of the end of the Soviet Union in December 1991 until now, the U.S. has been on a campaign to weaken Russia, to divide Russia, to surround Russia, to put U.S. military all around Russia, to break apart Russia, if possible, to sanction Russia to its knees, whatever it is. That's been the U.S. campaign. So if this war is going to stop, the U.S. has to stop its campaign against Russia. That's the story.
Professor Jeffrey Sachs, I'll stop you there. More from the director of Columbia University's Center for Sustainable Development after this break. Welcome back to Going Underground. I'm still here with the president of the UN Sustainable Development Solutions Network, Professor Jeffrey Sachs. Professor Sachs, we were talking about this upcoming meeting. Who knows, it might be cancelled by the time this is being broadcast. Such are the events in this world in flux. On Trump's decision to deploy US nuclear weapons to southern England, actually to near where I was born, Cambridge, RAF Lakenheath, do you believe that rather than how it's been interpreted as just another reckless move like the Ohio submarines, it's actually to control European ideas about their own forms of defense and deterrence, as European leaders clearly are very alarmed by Trump and try to pave some independent course, or at a very early stage, it has to be said, because they do whatever Trump says and Ursula von der Leyen. I don't know, you can tell me what you thought of that, Ursula von der Leyen just agreeing to a 15% tariff on all European goods to the U.S.
Well, how high can I jump or how low can I bow? Whatever it is, it was responding to the U.S. orders. And von der Leyen, I think, works for the U.S. government. I don't really see her working for Europe or the European interests. So I have my doubts about the European Commission as really representing Europe at this stage. It seems more of a commission for the U.S. government. It's sad to my mind that Brussels is home, excuse me, not only to the commission, but to NATO. And these got hopelessly confused. so that there is no Europe independent of NATO right now. NATO is a U.S. military alliance, and the commission basically does what the U.S. wants. So it's very sad. Now, in terms of exactly what the U.S. is doing with this deployment, I don't know. What I would say is that basically the whole nuclear arms framework has unraveled. The U.S., again, is really the agent of that unraveling. It started in 2002 with America unilaterally abandoning the anti-ballistic missile treaty. It went on to 2019 under Trump 1 with the U.S. abandoning the Intermediate Nuclear Force Treaty. Russia has just said they don't abide by that treaty anymore, given that the U.S. Unilaterally abandoned it. Other arms control agreements are either expiring or not being implemented. It's pretty dreadful right now. The world is dangerous enough without a new nuclear arms race, which is taking shape.
And of course, in West Asia, Israel may have nuclear weapons, but Trump has succeeded in creating a nuclear arms ambiguity, not only with Israel, which has been there for years, but now with Iran. How do you explain the way the so-called 12-day war is even covered in NATO nation capitals? Because presumably, people in Iran at the top are quite happy with the idea of strategic ambiguity on the lines of Israel's now. We don't know whether Iran has nuclear weapons right now.
We know that Netanyahu has been trying to goad the U.S. into a war with Iran for 30 years. So the fact of this latest round of goading, which actually produced an outright 12-day war, so-called, is not a surprise. I think Israel had to be disappointed, to say the least, in the outcome of these 12 days. First, what was exposed was the porous nature of Israel's so-called Iron Dome. Iranian missiles penetrated the air defense systems of Israel. These are layered defenses, but they did not stop Iranian missiles, which did great damage in Beersheba, in Tel Aviv, in Haifa, destroying the main building of the Weizmann Institute and many other direct hits. And that was just a preview of what could happen next. So that was a very serious blow to Israel's purported invulnerability. At the same time, the strikes on Fordow and the other nuclear processing sites clearly did not stop any potential of Iran to make nuclear weapons, which they have not wanted to do. Actually, there's a religious order not to do it, but with this provocation, who knows? The one result of all of this is that now there's no monitoring of where the highly processed uranium is, because it was almost surely or highly likely taken out of Fordow before the strikes. And the International Atomic Energy Agency is, of course, thrown out because it played a really improper role in all of this, in playing the game of Israel and the United States. Bad move, actually.
What do you think of Rafael Grossi? What do you think of this head of the IAEA and the allegations that, you know, he de facto was involved in the assassinations of Iranian scientists?
I think that the IAEA was not doing its job properly of protecting the world in these events. And the decisions that were taken beforehand, claims that are made, which I can't verify in any way, but claims that information that went to the IAEA somehow found its way to Mossad, CIA, and others. I don't know if that's true. If it is, it's extremely serious. But the IAEA was used, definitely, by Israel and by the United States in the lead up to this attack. And that's quite terrible. Very sad for the IAEA that it was used in this way and allowed itself to be used in this way.
I mean, you advised Secretary General Guterres. He hasn't actually said anything about that. It's a UN agency.
Well, I'm saying it. I'm just saying it on my own, which is that the U.S. misused the IAEA. Israel misused the IAEA. The Western countries, which are the vassal states of the United States, misused the IAEA. And we are set back in security as a result of that, because the IAEA is now out of Iran. The mere fact that the U.S. attacked Iran 4 days before what was to be the next round of diplomacy by itself is a grotesque misuse of diplomatic cover. And the fact that there was a so-called IAEA vote or decision taken the day before the attacks started is an obvious misuse of the UN system by the United States and its allies and Israel. Of course, the attack was already being positioned and prepared as those events were taking place. Grotesque.
Yeah, that doesn't bode well for meetings between Trump and Putin, arguably, when you negotiate with the U.S.
Well, you wonder what it's about, because there has been no sensible diplomacy for months. Trump came in saying he would end the war in 24 hours. I supported him in saying that because the war could end in 24 hours. We need a president of the United States with the ability, the intelligence, the gumption, the guts to stand up and say publicly, NATO will not enlarge to Ukraine. This was a wrong idea, a bad decision, and a provocation, and we're ending it. Trump probably has heard this. It's been murmured here and there within some of his team, but they don't say it publicly. And what instead happens is that the military-industrial complex of the United States and the endless warmongers of UK, which is just a warmongering shell of a former empire, but Starmer joins in chorus saying, we have to continue the war, we have to continue the war, or we make demands at this moment for an unconditional ceasefire without taking into account the root causes of the war. And Trump has been too weak or lacking understanding or without the political guts. I don't know what it is, but he's been too weak to tell the basic truth, which could have ended the war in 24 hours. And maybe this meeting is happening because maybe Witkoff told the truth to Putin. Yeah, we agree with you. NATO can't enlarge. Well, have Trump say it. It'll be a completely different world if the president actually acknowledges something truthful about this situation.
Yeah, when we don't know the reasons for why Trump is acting in a particular way, especially in the context of before the election, what Colonel Tulsi Gabbard at DNI and J.D. Vance, vice president, and RFK Jr. were saying. I mean, on the conspiracy vein, the Times of Israel said, Trump decided to bomb Iran's nuclear sites, and that's commendable. Reports later surfaced he rejected the option to bomb for a week's time in order to finish off all the sites. Thus, only Fordow was severely damaged, while other sites had only minimal or no damage. And now some old files are threatening him. Perhaps Trump will realize it really doesn't pay to start up with Israel, as if Trump is in any way anti-Israel. But do you think we had Ari Ben-Menashe, the former Amman Israeli military intelligence, and he was absolutely sure that we can explain some of his Trump's decision-making by the fact that there are files on him, Epstein files on him.
Yeah. Well, you know, there are multiple theories about why the United States gives a complete green light, and more than a green light, direct complicity in genocide. One is the Israel lobby. Campaign financing and AIPAC and so forth. Another is the large Christian evangelical vote. You listen to Speaker Johnson when he recently was in Israel. He's his foreign policy is based on the Bible, or at least as he interpreted the Bible. Unbelievable, by the way, the simple-mindedness of it. The misquotes, by the way, even of the Bible itself the speaker is just crude. And then the third is, of course, no doubt Mossad and the CIA have been joined at the hip for more than 60 years. We know a lot about that. But whether that also means basically the blackmail of a lot of the American political class, it's possible. This is widely suspected. I don't know, but it's possible. So there is a mystery. The mystery is that the American people, roughly 2-1, side with Palestine right now. They view Palestine as being butchered, starved to death, ethnically cleansed, and they don't like it. So that's the baseline of politics in the United States, which is that what Israel's doing is seen as truly despicable, which it is. Yet the American politics goes the other way. Now, it's not news to say that American foreign policy is in the hands of the military-industrial complex, not in the hands of public opinion. That's a truism that is happens to be true. But it's also, it raises a puzzle. Why? What is going on? We can see starvation of 2 million people in front of our eyes. And I was just at a UN Security Council session listening, and the American representative couldn't utter one word about the starvation of 2 million people. She was all filled with the starvation of 20 hostages, but not of 2 million people. So what is that? It is puzzling, I have to tell you. Even if you have lived through this, been through this for decades, is it the blackmail? Is it the lobbying? Is it the fact that we're run by intelligence agencies? Is it the Christian evangelical voter base of Trump? Yeah, probably all of them to some extent, though I could not give you the weighting of those factors.
Professor Jeffrey Sachs, thank you. And that's it for the show. Continued condolences to those bereaved by the UK-US-EU armed genocide in Palestine. We'll be back on Saturday. Until then, keep in touch via all our social media if it's not censored in your country. And head to our channel, Going Underground on Rumble, Going Underground TV on rumble.com to watch new and old episodes of Going Underground. See you Saturday.